Rachel Corey, American, killed by an Israeli army bulldozer. Tom Herndl, British, shot through the head by an Israeli army sniper. James Miller, British, shot dead by the Israeli army. If foreigners are dying like this in Gaza, what's happening to the people who live there? Gaza, a city under siege from Israeli forces. We'd arrived on the eve of the war against Iraq. We wanted to know how armed Palestinian groups like Hamas would react.
We happened to be walking home late in the evening. As we walked down the road, suddenly we were surrounded by these guys on either side of us.
But that wasn't to be the story of the next 40 days. In Gaza, over 1 million Palestinians live under the gun, and most of the guns are Israeli. The danger we were in didn't come from the Palestinians.
All day long, there's been extraordinary action in the sky. You could hear all of these planes going up and down, drones. You couldn't see most of them, they're flying too high. And now suddenly there's been a number of explosions. The planes are still overhead, you can hear them.
The explosions were in a residential area. A precision missile from an Israeli helicopter had just assassinated Saad al-Arabid, a leader of the armed Palestinian group Hamas, together with two bodyguards. Ten minutes later, helicopters began to circle the crowd. An Israeli helicopter had fired two more missiles at the Hamas leader's car. Shrapnel had ripped through scores of bystanders. The Israeli Defense Force announced the elimination of three terrorists. No mention of civilian casualties. 10 years ago, Israel gave limited independence to the Palestinians of Gaza. Now, to combat the armed groups who are based here, Israel has turned Gaza into a battlefield.
This is Mahmoud. He's 10 years old. He's got shrapnel in his eye, in his stomach, in his leg, in his foot, pieces of metal all over his body. He was playing on his bicycle outside his own house.
47 people had been wounded, many of them children. Four more people lay dead in the hospital morgue. When I asked the Israeli Defense Force why they had fired rockets into the crowd, they told me they wouldn't comment on security matters.
Ahmed Shevin from last night, he's 13 years old.
This is Mohammed, another victim of last night's attack. He's got severe head injuries and shrapnel in his body. He's in a critical situation like all of the other people we filmed in here. He might make it, then again, he might not. This is Ala, aged 15, another civilian casualty. Every time the Israelis use a missile to assassinate somebody here, it sends shrapnel flying everywhere. This is what shrapnel does to the human body.
Ala died shortly after we filmed these pictures. The next day, the dead were taken from the hospital. Ahmed al-Ashram was only 13. His mother and sister bade him farewell.
Hello.
Gunmen appeared, mourning the dead Hamas leader. But most of the crowd was there to mourn the death of the innocent youngsters.
The feeling here is that the West accepts this kind of action. It doesn't matter how much so-called collateral damage there is.
Whichever side kills last says it is a response to the one before. In the grim calculus of this conflict, around 3 Palestinian civilians die for every Israeli killed. It's an equation that keeps old hatreds fresh. In the south of Gaza, near the border with Egypt, is the district of Rafah.
This is one of 4 towers that overlook Rafah. They're Israeli army watch posts. People have been shot from these towers without the Israelis ever coming into Rafah.
The Israeli Defense Force say the soldiers in the towers target only gunmen. That may be true, but those bullets also kill civilians.
Hey, wait.
Where is it coming from?
Go down, go behind.
Behind where? Where is it coming from?
It's coming from the towers behind the wall. And it's so fucking scary because the bullets could bounce anywhere.
We're being shot at by Israelis from a watchtower at the moment. The shooting was just coming down the street. The danger is if a bullet ricochets, it can hit you. It seems to be coming straight down. As you can see, all the buildings here are completely pockmarked. This happens every single day down here.
But one of them bullets was very close by, very, very close by.
These women are passing by, their children, they're used to it. They think it's quite normal for these bullets to come flying down this road, so they don't even seek cover.
They should. Since September 2000, over 250 people have been killed in Rafah, a third aged under 18.
We can see the army post over there, and they can certainly see us.
And that's the Southern Command headquarters of the Israeli army.
Almost every day, Israeli troops leave their base to bulldoze Palestinian houses. They say it's to deny terrorists cover. But most of the houses belong to ordinary Palestinians. Thousands have lost their homes, some with only moments' notice. And there's no compensation. For 2 years, despite tear gas and bullets, a small group of British and American protesters from the International Solidarity Movement has tried to stop the bulldozers. One of the protesters filmed these pictures.
Please stop shooting. And I wish that you may learn to love your neighbors and not.
Two days before our visit, a protester had been killed. Rachel Corey was the first American to be killed in Gaza.
She was at eye level with the driver of the bulldozer. She was up her head and upper torso were actually above the blade of the bulldozer, so he could very clearly see that she was there, her in her orange fluorescent jacket that she was wearing. But instead of stopping at this point, he continued forward, which buried her legs and pulled her legs down. And as she got pulled down, she was pulled out of view of the bulldozer driver. And if he had stopped at this point, he may have only just broken her legs. But he continued forward anyway until she was sucked all the way underneath the bulldozer.
The Israeli Defense Force says the driver did not see her. That Rachel Corey died because of her own irresponsible and illegal behavior.
You can see the space underneath the bulldozer. It wasn't the treads that killed her. She didn't get run over by the treads. It was only the blade. Either a really gross mistake or a really brutal murder.
She was talking and her lip was torn, but it was just like,
oh my God, she survived. And then she said, my back is broken, and I held her head. I'd taken my phone out to call an ambulance, but as soon as she said, my back is broken, I dropped my phone and just held onto her head to try and stabilize her spine. And it was just such a miracle. It was like, how did she survive? She looks a mess, but it doesn't matter. She's alive, she's talking.
But not for long. Rachel died soon afterwards.
I just have an image of her as I last saw her before she was engulfed, just scrabbling, desperately trying to free herself and trying to get out of the way of the bulldozer.
That afternoon, Rachel Corey's friends planned to hold a memorial service on the front line. If Rachel made a mistake, it was to believe she could protest in the same way she would have in America. But here, there are different rules.
The peace activists are going to lay flowers on the spot where Rachel was killed by the bulldozer a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
This area is surrounded by Israeli checkpoints, so we're being watched by Israelis right now.
I was about to learn my own lesson about the rules of life here.
How do you feel about what Rachel did? He said he's glad that she defended the Palestinians.
The shots came from an armored personnel carrier speeding towards the memorial service. When some of the protesters stood their ground, the armored personnel carrier tear gassed them and then fired over their heads. Rachel Corey's memorial service came to an abrupt end. Later, I returned to the house that overlooks the place where Rachel Corey died. She used to sleep here to help protect it. It's owned by a pharmacist, Dr. Samir Nasrallah.
This house is really the front line. This is the last house left standing in what was a neighbourhood, and now this is just one lonely house on the frontier on its own.
Walk with me, okay?
His front door opens onto what the Israelis call the combat zone. They shoot first, then ask questions.
So that's where Rachel was when she died.
Yeah. And the bulldozers start to coming to this.
We heard the sound of something approaching. Dr. Samir sprinted for the house.
We've had to cut that interview. A tank is now coming. We have to get inside. Which may not be much safer. It's huge. Wow. Noise? Is that a tank?
Yeah, of course.
And aren't your children scared?
Yeah. Every day hearing gunshots. Every day.
What's that banging?
Karim, في حد بخبط على الباب يمكن.
Azmi Keshawi, our local producer, is worried.
I hope they're not demolishing this house.
They stay because they've put their life savings in this house. They're still paying off the mortgage.
I can't sleep, you know. I smoke about 40 to 50 cigarettes. Because during night, I'm thinking with sound. I open, see near my house what happened. Prepare yourself like this. Open the door. Notice everything.
And you hear them outside all the time, like we've heard them driving around this evening.
Yeah.
Do they come in the night?
Yeah, of course. I don't know. Maybe I will lie tomorrow. Maybe my daughter, my son. But I'm laughing in front of them.
Three hours later, it went quiet, and we crept outside.
Take care.
We'd rented a flat in the centre of Gaza's Rafah district. Every night we were there, the Israelis fired hundreds of bullets into the area. The Israeli Defence Force say they return fire when they're shot at. But Israeli fire was overwhelming, relentless, and hugely dangerous to civilians.
After a whole night of shooting, everybody's waking up to just another normal day. But in Rafah, that's another day of war. You can die anywhere, at any time in Gaza. One morning, we heard that the Israelis were making one of their regular raids into Palestinian territory. Azmi, our local producer, guided us to where we could see what was happening.
We need some protection for the car. That's why we're parking it in here.
Israeli troops go in to arrest militants. Civilians often get killed.
Here we've got the tanks. This is what happens during an incursion. They seal off the roads. The people inside are trapped in there. There's no getting out. And for people like us who want to go in and find out what they're doing, it's impossible to get any closer than this. Even this is probably too close. Are right in here now. There are kids down there. The kids are being tear gassed right now. They've been throwing stones at the tanks. The tanks have been shooting towards the children, shooting down the street. It's lethal being here.
This time, no one was killed. There are several such raids every week.
Is this from the tanks?
We went to a district called Nusrat that Israeli tanks had invaded in the middle of the night.
These are fresh tank tracks. It's quite easy to see the route the Israeli army took down that road and then down here.
The military objective was to capture an important Palestinian fighter. It was successful, but 7 civilians died and 67 were wounded.
When the fighting was going on, a 16-year-old boy came out here and stood there and looked down the street to see what was happening. A shell came flying down the street from one of the Israeli tanks, through the boy's head, then through the wall, there and there.
I came back a few days later to talk to the boy's family. They were watching a video of him dancing at his sister's wedding. Omar had just got a job as a builder's apprentice. In the last 2.5 years, hospital records show hundreds of Palestinian civilians in Gaza have been killed, thousands injured. I visited the family of 12-year-old Huda Darwish. She was sitting in her classroom when she was hit in the head by an Israeli bullet.
This is Huda's school uniform, the one she was wearing the day she was shot. That's the headscarf she was wearing. Here are the bullet holes, and that's her blood. And this is her jacket.
Her jacket. It was wounds here. Her skull wound. Yes. We collect her skull. What is her guilty to be like this?
What has she done?
What she's done? She's in her class, in her desk, she's writing. Why? Why this happened to her?
I went with Amal Darwish, Huda's favorite aunt, to the hospital. The doctors had said Huda was waking from her 3-week coma. To their joy, she recognized their voices. But to their despair, they realized the bullet had blinded her. Huda had wanted to be a school teacher.
She asked about her homework.
She's worried about her homework.
Homework.
And then the reality of her shattered life suddenly seemed to dawn on her.
She said that I want to die. I want to give up this pain. What did happen to me? Why did it happen to me?
Huda's school is run by the United Nations. It's a big open site, not easy to mistake. I went there to work out how a bullet could possibly have hit her at her desk.
This is a school picture of Huda. Everyone says she was very beautiful. It's a bomb.
In fact, an Israeli shell had exploded nearby.
This is Huda's classroom. This is where she got shot a few weeks ago.
They told me it happens a lot, but that doesn't dull the fear.
These children are so traumatized. This girl is in a state of shock. This happens to the kids here all the time.
I realize this school is always at risk. The bullet that struck Huda came from an Israeli position just 500 meters away. Gaza is completely surrounded and sealed off by the Israeli army. They say it's to keep suicide bombers out of Israel. We'd arranged to meet with the commander of the Israeli troops surrounding the Rafah district.
In the settlement, they shoot
Colonel Pinky Soaret drove us towards his front line.
Bring you back in one piece.
Thank you.
We approached a desolate area of bunkers and watchtowers. We were forbidden from filming them in case we revealed their position.
peace between the Israeli and the Egyptians.
We stopped in the colonel's command post. He said he wanted to show me what they were up against.
So this is the footage you're telling
me. Yes.
On his laptop was night vision footage of Palestinian fighters launching rockets towards his positions.
Second one?
The Israelis have a sophisticated surveillance system.
And how do you film this?
We have cameras that can check it.
So you have CCTV in your tanks, you film everything that they're doing?
Yes. You see the weapon here? Mm-hmm. You see the Qassam?
Yeah.
They put it on a kind of a stick, even, whatever you put it.
So how did you stop them?
With a tank.
With a tank. Did you kill them?
I hope so. I think so.
Down below, the Rafah district where we were living. To the colonel, it was a combat zone.
I tried to hit the terrorists, people that conduct terrorist activity on my troops, on this area.
Do you ever get it wrong?
Excuse me?
Do you ever get it wrong?
Yes, yes. There is a stray bullet here because it's a fighting zone, and sometimes there are people that get inside the range of the bullet when we are fighting against terrorists that work in this area. And this is a combat area. You don't have option not to do something when your people, when your troop is under risk in this area. And the fact that Palestinians use or try to use and use the civilian here as a human shield, mm-hmm. it's something that I cannot understand.
Back in Rafah, the protesters were still trying to stop the Israeli bulldozers. A new arrival was Tom Herndl, a British 21-year-old student with dreams of being a Fleet Street photographer. As part of his university photography course, he was taking pictures of the protest and doing some himself. Four days after the protesters took these pictures, Tom Herndl was shot. One of the protesters was carrying a camera. Tom Herndl wasn't shot as he stood in front of a bulldozer. He was standing on a street in Rafah. He was wearing the bright fluorescent jacket most protesters wore. He'd been shot through the head by an Israeli sniper.
Hello, I'm calling you from Rafah. A British citizen called Tom Herndl has just been shot in the head by the Israelis. We would like you to inform the Israeli army to stop shooting in the Yibna area.
The news reached us within minutes in Gaza City.
We're on our way to Rafah, where a young peace activist, a British guy, is shot in the head, is in the hospital down here, and we're waiting at the checkpoint to get through.
At his bedside was one of the protesters. Alice Coy is a young Jewish woman from South London.
Stay strong, stay there, OK? I'm just touching your shoulder. This is Alice, okay?
great. You know, everyone is now going to know that they're shooting children in Rafa.
The situation was desperate.
He's very bad. He's looking very bad. There's inlet and output from the right to left.
So the bullet went in one side of his head, yes. Through his brain, yes. And out yes. The other.
There is the damage in the brain, and there is the fracture in the skull, multiple fracture in the skull, in so exit.
Is he breathing on his own, or is the machine breathing?
No, there's no breathing. There is not mechanical ventilation now.
The doctor said Tom's only hope was major surgery. Speed was of the essence. But they lack the facilities.
All they can do is to stabilize him. He said they can do whatever. You know, Israeli helicopter, they can come, they can take him from here just to.
Azmi, the local journalist we were working with, suggests to the protesters contact the British embassy.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's up to you.
British diplomats might be able to negotiate safe passage for Tom across the front line to a nearby Israeli hospital.
Hello, my name is Alice. I'm in Rafa. There was a British citizen, Tom Herndon, who's been shot. I can give you the phone number of the hospital.
We're waiting to hear back from the British Embassy. They're waiting on a call from the IDF. Everything at the moment is in chaos. Meanwhile, time has been wasted and Tom needs to be moved.
Alice called constantly to check the progress of negotiations with the Israeli army. But there was no news.
My name is Alice. I'm a grapher.
The doctors considered the alternative of taking Tom to the main Palestinian hospital in Gaza. But Israelis control part of the road, sometimes closing it completely, even to ambulances. With Tom so ill, it seemed too much of a risk.
He's very bad, very critical. His brain is exposed, the tissue is out. They don't really give him much of a chance.
More than an hour had passed since Tom Herndon had been shot in the head by an Israeli sniper. The British Embassy had still not managed to negotiate for an ambulance to take him across the front line to a nearby well-equipped hospital in Israel.
You've spoken to the British Embassy?
Yes, and the British Embassy has said...
It's now like an hour. It's been like an hour since he's been shot.
And
now.
They've spoken to the IDF.
Until now, they said they're speaking to him. You know,
it's been like an hour.
They've been dealing with the British Embassy for an hour and a half now, and still nothing is happening. And Alice and the others are really shocked because they expected that in a situation like this, it would happen like clockwork, that the IDF could arrange an escort into Israel or send a helicopter. But so far, nothing is happening.
After 2.5 hours, the British Embassy got authorization for Tom to be taken to an Israeli outpost.
They've sent it for Gush Katif, yeah? He's going to Gush Katif, to the settlement, to be met by helicopter and taken into Israel.
Another problem. Israel says Palestinian ambulances are used to smuggle explosives. They're often fired on. The doctors wanted a written guarantee of safety.
Doctor, I can't send a medical crew to Gush Katif without a guarantee they're going to come back out of Gaza alive. I can't send the 3 people to die in Gush Katif for one, for someone who might make it and might not make it.
Well, they've got the guarantee, but we need to get him now. Helicopter's in the air, and the British Embassy have said that, yes, it's fine.
The man I'm here for our Palestinian doctor to give this patient to come safely without any problem from the Israeli. This is the only thing we want. We are emergency, and this is a dear emergency. The patient will die if we are not in the hurry.
Well, it won't be okay if we're waiting any fucking longer.
7. The Palestinian doctors still haven't received a written guarantee of safety from the British Embassy for their staff, for their driver and their two paramedics. But they're going to go now because there's no more time to waste. They're taking a big risk. They're afraid that once their staff go into Israel, that they could be imprisoned or anything could happen to them, could get caught in an ambush or anything. But they've just decided they can't wait for this fax anymore.
Please, everyone, Stella. Yeah. Out, out.
We're going to try and follow the ambulance and make sure there's no trouble along the way.
We hoped the soldiers knew we were coming. Alice and I kept in touch on the mobile phone.
We're on the border with Egypt. The British Embassy has arranged with the IDF for Tom to be collected here by helicopter and ambulance and transferred to hospital in Israel. This is happening for Tom because he's a British citizen, but if it was a Palestinian who'd been injured in a similar way, there would be no medical treatment in Israel.
It's fucking stupid.
They said go back.
In Hebrew, the soldiers told the ambulance to reverse. The Arab driver misunderstood.
I'll be reverse!
Alice, they're telling the ambulance to go back. The Israelis are saying to reverse.
Okay, now he's telling him.
It's okay, he's saying go forward, you're fine. He's just yelling commands at you. You can go forward now. Okay, bye, good luck. I'll speak to you soon.
I'm not gonna wait here because it's too...
Alice, I'm sorry. As we said, it's dangerous for us to wait there by the border.
He we're going
to
wait further down.
We're going to wait further down.
30 minutes later, the Palestinian ambulance returned, having transferred Tom to an Israeli ambulance. The next morning, the Israeli Defense Force gave us a statement. They said a soldier had fired a single shot which had hit a man in camouflage uniform holding a gun.
It's the morning after Tom was shot. Apparently he's possibly brain dead. He's still on life support in Beersheba Hospital.
The Israeli authorities claim that the International Solidarity Movement acts illegally and supports terrorists. I went to their office and confronted them with the IDF statement about Tom's shooting.
Hello.
I spoke to 10 eyewitnesses. All contradicted the Israeli version of events.
A sniper from the tower shot against the wall of the house, not very high above the heads of a large group of children, and then there were more shots, and people shouted in alarm and ducked down and tried to run out. But not all the children came out. From where I was, about 20 to 25 metres from where Tom went to stand, I could see a little boy and further in, two little girls who might have been, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, something like that, perhaps less. Tom saw them, that they were in danger, and he was a very loving boy and his concern was for the children. So he went back. He was wearing... Sorry. The fluorescent orange jacket. So he was very obvious. He didn't duck down, he stood. And he signaled to the children to come out. And then he bent to help the little boy out. And then saw there were two little girls further in and was going back to try and get them. And he actually was stooping to help them when he was shot in the head and fell forward and then gave a roar of pain and that's all.
Another protester who had witnessed what had happened agreed to take me to the site of the shooting. Laura Gordon is a young Jewish woman from Pittsburgh, USA.
There's a tower there from which Tom was shot. And there's another military tower a little bit down the ways. And then further west, you can see there's a tank that just sits there guarding, monitoring.
Tom was more or less here in this very spot. The bullet came from there, went into his head and exited. That's his blood.
The eyewitnesses we spoke to said the Israelis had fired multiple shots.
A bullet went through his head, leaving shrapnel behind, but it did exit, so I don't know where that bullet went, but here are some of the other shots. They're head level. Absolutely eye level. Anyone standing here was gone.
I followed the trail of Tom's blood along the road. When this happens to a foreigner, everyone takes notice. For Palestinians, it's daily life, routine and bloody. Soon there was more desperate news. An award-winning team, director-cameraman James Miller and correspondent Cyrus Shah, had started making a documentary for American television about children trapped in violence. That night after filming, holding a white flag and shouting they were British journalists, they approached an Israeli armored personnel carrier. James Miller was shot dead. The IDF said James Miller had approached their troops while they were fighting a battle with Palestinian gunmen and had died in the crossfire. We went to the site to find out what had happened. With us was our trusted local producer, Azmi, and the local journalist, Abdulrahman Abdullah, who had been working with Miller.
There is tanks or anything, and we'll go from the back to back road in between the houses.
Mm-hmm. Everyone was on edge. Since James's death, we were being even more careful. The Israelis talk about tunnels which gunmen use to bring in weapons. We found another sort of passageway, holes knocked between houses to help the people living here to move about without getting shot. We were getting a further taste of what it's like to be a Palestinian in Rafah. Finally, we arrived at the house where James Miller had been filming that night.
Assalamu alaikum.
It was close to where Rachel Corey had died, close to where Tom Herndl had been hit.
The wounded, and she was looking at me, and at this moment...
Abdulrahman insisted on showing us where James had died.
They shot two or three or four bullets. I saw James, and he was here.
What happened that night was filmed by a local news agency. That film and the testimony of the journalists there contradicts the Israeli army's account. Through the night, Miller filmed these bulldozers at work. At 11 o'clock, things went quiet. Rather than take the back route and invite sniper fire, the team decided to leave openly, walking towards the Israeli armored vehicle outside. There was no gunfire.
James was wearing a helmet with TV in fluorescent letters. Abood was wearing a helmet TV in fluorescent letters. We had been sitting in a very well-lit veranda for the last 4 hours, filming these APCs, filming these bulldozers. I have absolutely no doubt that they had seen us, and they had seen us for exactly what we were, which was journalists.
still warm. We're going to have to pick up. When is the better?
Help!
Help!
Microphone?
I don't know how to bend that.
The second shot had hit James Miller.
James was in a very, very bad way. And I thought he had a wound on his neck. Later I discovered he had a hole in his back. He lost consciousness almost immediately.
When the firing stopped, the journalists begged the soldiers to give James Miller first aid. The soldiers eventually threw down a stretcher into the mud. All the evidence points to a cold-blooded killing.
James died because we trusted them to behave like a civilized army, because we knew that they could see that we were civilians, that we weren't armed, and that we were carrying a white flag. We trusted them not to kill us under those circumstances, and they shot James anyway.
The Israeli Defense Force say they've launched a thorough inquiry into James Miller's killing, but they've refused to take evidence from the journalists who were there, and in their public statements, continue to ignore the video evidence.
Anti-tank rockets were fired at our soldiers. The soldiers returned fire. This was very late at night in a combat situation, as I say. And apparently, James was wandering the streets late at night in a place where military activity was going on. And as a journalist, he knew that he was endangering himself. And unfortunately, again, I say, he was hit by the exchanges of fire.
Tom Herndl is still in a coma. The IDF are investigating his shooting, but have again refused to take evidence from eyewitnesses. The IDF continue to maintain they fired a single shot at a gunman who was firing on them.
A soldier identified him as wearing a camouflage kind of jacket, and he was pointing a pistol, shooting both in the air and then aiming at the outpost and shooting at the outpost. The commander of the outpost, also identifying the gunman with a gun in his hand, fired a single shot at his direction.
The IDF's investigation into Rachel Corey's death has now concluded that she was not run over by an Israeli army bulldozer, but was probably hit by a falling slab of concrete, a tragic accident.
She was in the wrong place in the wrong time, endangering her life, the Palestinian lives and our soldiers' lives, by disturbing an IDF operation.
With reason, the Israeli authorities underline the suicide bombings and outrages on their own soil. But since we've made this film, they've made it even more difficult for journalists to visit Gaza. As James Miller's death shows, anyone who tries to report this side of the story is now in real danger. But if Gaza fades from the news bulletins, don't confuse silence with peace. It is still a killing zone.